Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. It is Monday morning, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Yeah, and Eric and Colin are back. They took a couple of weeks off because they had prior commitments big time with the Chicago Critics Film Festival. We're going to get all the details on how that went and all that good stuff. But now they're back. We're going to review the new movies and then play a little catch up on some of the stuff that that they didn't review or they didn't we didn't talk about on the air with them. I want to thank Jim Leskowski again for filling in for Colin and Eric while they were off. But Colin and Eric are back, and we've got our full Monday morning movie reviews. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. Okay. So let's welcome the guys back to the show. Here's Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Eric, tell us how the festival went and some of the highlights and all that cool stuff.
Well, it went really well. We had just really another successful festival. All the guests that we have talked about on the show just had another just fantastic year of having guests who were just really warm and welcoming and just happy to be there and hanging out with people afterwards. The closing night with Operator, all the local people that were here that worked on the film and were part of the film, was a really special night for them. Just a really great closing night. The people who did American Fable, another Illinois production that were there that Monday, they had a really great night, and they're still tweeting about stuff that we've posted about that. And Colin's got a lot of the videos and the Q&As and pictures and stuff up at the website, so you can, if you missed any of this stuff, you can actually see a lot of the Q&As that we have up online already.
All right, and that's ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
That's it.
All right, okay. Colin, tell me how your shorts program went. Were you happy about it?
Very happy, very happy. They seem to be getting a little more popular every year, so it's really good. We had Don Lube and Jocelyn DeBoer, the filmmakers of a movie called Greener Grass, a really weird comedy here. And, you know, it's just great seeing Jocelyn again. She's been at our festival before. And, you know, they were here pretty much all week, just, you know, popping in, watching movies, the shorts themselves were, you know, just warmly received by the audience. You know, on the way out, they want to know more about them, where they can find them and everything. And, you know, it's a real treat to have that kind of reception to something that, you know, we worked really hard in putting together. So, the whole festival as a whole is just so much fun and exhausting.
Yeah, I understand. Well, you guys took some time off. Congratulations on the success, you guys.
And thank you.
I know you guys will kick ass again next year. No question about it. Before we get to some of the movies that came out over the past couple of weeks that the three of us didn't get a chance to talk about, I do want to mention that you guys are both coming to see Raiders Tuesday, right?
I am.
Colin?
Yeah, I'm hoping to.
Okay, all right.
I can say that I'm hoping.
I don't know, Eric, have you got a ticket yet?
I have not.
Okay. we may sell out on this one.
Wow.
I'm not kidding. I looked at the seating chart and I went, huh? And I shouldn't be surprised. It's Raiders, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it is, without question, the biggest presale we've ever had. Without question.
Wow.
So it's going to be a blast on Tuesday night. It's going to be huge. It's going to be on the big screen. 35th anniversary. I can't believe that movie is 35 years old. I can't, Eric, did you see it? Did you see it on video?
No, I remember it more fondly, or not fondly, but more keenly on video. I do remember seeing it in the theater, but not really grasping the entire thing. I think I was in and out.
Yeah.
In the theater. I was like six.
Yeah. So. Well, this is going to be something, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is good. Colin, you've seen it in the theater?
Yeah, a few times.
Yeah. I was 16 when the movie came out. So I saw it like 50 times. It was that and Escape from New York that summer. Those were the two movies that I just saw like 700,000 mm-hmm. times. And I just watched it. You know, people think I'm nuts for watching the movie like before I'm going to see it on Tuesday. But I like to be prepped. I like to be prepped, and I want to talk about it. And, you know, And it's just, man, it's great. And I was watching it on my TV. And it's so good, man. It is so, so good. And I have to say, man, you know, you can't oversell how awesome Karen Allen is in the
mm-hmm.
I mean, just like, you know, I'm in the minority. I prefer Temple of Doom. Temple of Doom is my favorite Indiana Jones movie. But anytime I get into an argument about it with people, you know, they'll point out something great about Raiders, and I'll point out something great about Temple, and then they'll point out something great about Raiders, and I'll point out something great about Temple, and then they say Karen Allen, and I go, damn it.
Right.
So that's a big problem. But anyway, it's going to be a blast on Tuesday night. Eric, I know you're going to have a blast. I mean, this is, you know.
Please.
And I mean, you know, in that theater, on that screen, it's just going to be, it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it. So, all right. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about some stuff that we reviewed, Jim and I reviewed, while you guys were out. Neither of you bothered with The Do-Over?
No.
Okay, I got 41 minutes into The Ridiculous Six.
Yeah.
I made it 33 minutes into The Do-Over. I was telling this to Jim, and I was talking about it on the air. It just seems absolutely appropriate that I now watch Adam Sandler movies on my phone. It just seems that's the... You know what I mean? Like, that's the place that his movies should, not to, you know, to disparage Netflix in any way, because Netflix is amazing and obviously an enormously successful company. But they're just something, it just seems apropos that I'm like laying on my bed watching this movie on my phone and then like, okay, that's it, and turning it off, as opposed to actually going out to a theater and paying $11 to see it.
Why don't you watch it on your TV?
I don't have it hooked up to my, I don't have one of them smart TVs.
Oh, okay.
So I have a tablet, but I didn't even feel like watching it on my tablet.
Okay.
I just, like, my phone was there, and I'm like, all right, it's Adam Sandler, you know?
Yeah. About all he deserves.
No, that's what I'm saying. I watched Ridiculous 6 on the tablet.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. You downgraded.
I did, yeah. So anyway, it was terrible.
I was so happy when that Netflix deal went through. Everybody else was screaming, what? Are you kidding? I was like, this is the greatest news ever that the movies are now on Netflix. Now I officially do not have to care anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that if he does another Hotel Transylvania, that'll be on the big screen, right?
Right.
Oh, sure.
And like if he does another Pixels, which they're not going to.
Well, no, not after that bomb.
No. All right. Well, Colin, I understand that you saw the Angry Birds movie, which Jim reviewed and I didn't see, and Jim did not like it.
Yeah, no, it's not good. It's just I'm a fan of the game.
Okay.
This is the first video game movie that I actually have some interest in, just from a gaming perspective. You know, I've played it on a tablet or my phone many times. I especially love the Star Wars version. It's really great.
Right.
It's really addictive. Addicting. But the movie itself is just obnoxious, really unimaginative, like, origin story of Angry Birds and why the birds are so angry. And I just remember just sitting there not laughing a single time and thinking, man, that Ratchet and Clank movie was better than this.
Oh.
That's how not good Angry Birds is. And the voice work is really unimaginative and you know, just like, couldn't care less about any of the characters. So I'm not surprised that it's not doing very well for an animated film, and for video game movie too. So
I got to say, you know, the thing that turned me off, the reason, I mean, Jim said he was going to see it, so I was like, okay, I don't need to rush to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was turned off immediately when I saw the commercial, and the main joke in almost every commercial was characters drinking urine and then dry heaving.
Yeah, there's a lot of urine and vomit jokes in the movie too, and you know that just kind of goes to show how desperate, you know, the movie is to win over its target audience. You don't have to be that desperate.
All right.
When it comes to stuff like this.
Eric, you did see Neighbors 2.
Yes, I did.
Now, where did you stand on this one? Because I think it barely qualifies as a movie.
Yeah. It's not good, and I say that as a fan of the first film. And it's a film that I thought started with a lot of promise. I thought it was going to go in some territory about just the, sort of the nature of sexism and stuff. I thought it had a really interesting setup for a movie that essentially looked like it was just going to repeat a lot of the stuff, and then it just repeated a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
And it's also the thing that really struck me about the film. I mean, I think there are some laughs in there. I don't think it's as horrible as you did. Yeah. I think it's a horribly missed opportunity. But the thing that really struck me watching the film is that I think it's one of the most poorly edited comedies I've seen in the last two decades.
Eric, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievably horribly
there
edited.
Jokes that are set up. There's a whole like ruse. Like two-thirds of the way through the movie, the big ruse that the girls play on the couple.
Involving texting?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is so poorly structured. I didn't know who was doing what,
yep.
Where they were, what you know, like how stupid is anyone involved in that thing, you know, based on the editing? It was completely unbelievable.
It was I mean, I'm just saying in terms of all filmmaking, the entire film was, I thought, was horrendous. But like in terms of how well it was made, it's a terribly directed movie. It's terribly acted and horribly edited. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention about the editing before we break here, Eric, is at one point it's established that Zac Efron is living in the sorority. Like he comes downstairs, he's in, and then there's a scene like 5-10 minutes later where he's packing his stuff up from Dave Franco's apartment and leaving.
Right.
Like what the hell do you? What?
Yeah, it's like, and they set up Dave Franco's character, all you know, gay. It takes you like 6 minutes to realize that that's a thing,
yeah.
that's happening.
Yeah.
And they don't, and just, I mean, like, and poor Chloe Grace
Moretz. Yeah, that's the worst.
Who is just, I mean, whatever you want to say about what the movie says about sexism or whatnot, the women in the film are not likable at all.
Not at all. It is without question the worst performance she's ever given, but she's not given anything to do, and it's a terrible character. It's just, I hated the movie. I hated every frame of it. And it's not doing well either.
No.
Okay, guys, hang on. We got to take a break, and we got new movies to talk about. But we wanted to play a little catch up here. We're going to play up, we got a few more movies that have been out for a little while. Jim and I reviewed them, but I want to hear what Colin and Eric have to say about them. We'll talk more about that. Coming up, we got to take a break for the news here on 720 WGN. We're back to the Monday morning movie reviews. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here until 5 a.m. You know what we're going to talk about a little bit later is, you know, remember last week we did the I Just Don't Get It, where we were like talking about things that everybody loves but you don't. We're going to do the opposite of that this morning. We're going to talk about things that you love that everybody else hates. And it can, again, fall into any category. But I guess it's a guilty pleasure thing, kind of. You love it. Everybody else on the planet hates it. We'll do that a little bit later on as well. My dad will tell a joke, too, because it's Monday. And it is the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Let's get back to that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Eric and Colin. Welcome back, guys.
Hello. Hey,
let me just say that you made the correct choice in not seeing Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it.
Most of America.
Yeah, oh, man, is this thing tanking. We'll talk about it later when we do box office, Eric, but wow.
Yeah,
I knew it wasn't going to do very well because I went to go see it with my folks, and I went to go see it last Saturday, and we saw it in the IMAX and the 3D, which if you're going to see the movie, that's the best way to see it because, like, visually it's pretty amazing, and they do great stuff with the effects, and the movie was shot in 3D, so all of that stuff. If you're going to see the movie, at least see it in that IMAX 3D thing because that's why they shot it, and that's how it works. It's not a horrible movie. It has moments. Helena Bonham Carter is, again, the best thing in the movie. But there were like 8 people in the theater. And this was like a Saturday at 5. And I walk in, I'm like, oh my God. So here's an interesting thing. Now, I don't know if you guys, do you ever get the wrong 3D glasses in an IMAX 3D theater?
No.
Okay. Because when I go to, I don't go like to the Navy Pier or anything where they only have one IMAX theater, you know. But where they don't show up regular 3D movies. Apparently, the regular 3D movies that you don't see in IMAX have different 3D glasses.
Hmm.
Because my folks and I, we get in and they say, you know, all right, put on your 3D glasses now. And the trailers for the 3D trailer started. We put our glasses on and nothing. It was blurry. And it was completely blurry. And I asked my parents, I'm like, is it blurry? And they're like, yeah. So I go out to the lobby. And I go, hey, I don't think the 3D is working in the IMAX theater here because it's put the glasses on and it's blurry. And they're like, okay, we'll find out what's going on. And then I saw a guy walking into the projection area, and I'm like, hey, I think this is kind of screwed up in here. You might want to check it out. So I come back in, and nobody else is complaining, the other eight people in the theater. And so I'm sitting there, and the guy comes back in, and he walks up to where my parents and I are sitting, and he goes, did you guys buy tickets for IMAX? And I'm like, yeah, we bought tickets for IMAX. And he's like, oh. And then he looked at the glasses. He goes, oh, they gave you the wrong glasses. So he went out and got us the glasses, the IMAX glasses. Now, did you guys know that there's...
This actually makes sense now that you mention it, because I'm guessing the IMAX glasses were bigger.
They were bigger, and they had like a bigger curve in them.
Yeah, I guess to fill your peripheral vision for a screen that big, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, but why didn't the 3D effect work on the other glasses? I mean, it was, I don't know.
It probably has something to do with lenses of...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. See, to me, now that's what I took from seeing that movie. The thing I remember the most was that the fact that the IMAX 3D glasses are different. That's what I remember about the...
Did you take the guy out in the alley and start a street fight with him?
No, I didn't. No, I did not. No.
Too bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, let's talk about The Lobster. Eric, you reviewed this movie on the show some time ago. Where'd you see it? Sundance?
Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you listen, I loved it. I think it's one of the best movies of the year. And it's the second half of the movie is not quite as strong as the first half. I agree with that.
Yes.
But I was so hook, line, and sinker during the first half of the movie that when it became a little more conventional as it went along, I was still on for the ride. And I love Colin Farrell in it so much.
Yeah.
But now, Eric, you liked it overall, right?
Yeah, no, I definitely liked it. I think the first half is stronger than the second half, and I thought they could have gone just a little bit further with the final moment of the film that I thought would have made it a little even more interesting.
Yeah.
But no, I definitely liked it. I definitely like what it says about relationships and wanting to be in love and that kind of stuff. Definitely a unique film.
You know what's really funny? I loved it. I think it's great. It's really funny. I have this guy on from The Hollywood Reporter to talk. He'll be on with us on Thursday morning, in fact, Dan Feinberg, to talk TV.
Yeah.
And Dan was on with me, and we mentioned The Lobster, you know, that he tweeted about how much he liked it. And then he said, you know, I can't watch reality dating shows anymore because through the lens of The Lobster, after seeing The Lobster, there's just this now weird, surreal quality to watching The Bachelor or The Bachelorette or something like that. And I was like, you know what? That totally makes sense.
Well, I kind of hope most people on those reality shows get turned into animals.
I know, and that's the beauty of it. Now, Colin, what did you think of The Lobster?
I'm really mixed on it.
Okay.
I certainly won't deny its uniqueness and its originality and its vision. But in the moment of watching it, I felt like I was trying as hard as the movie was trying to get a reaction out of me. I felt like the movie was just trying too hard. It was a mix of tones that just I had a hard time responding to.
Okay.
It was like too absurdist to be a truly sad depiction, but also too sad to be funny at the same time. It was something that I was trying to latch on to connect with it in some way, and it became a struggle. I didn't like that everybody was sort of talking in this monotone, you know, delivery, and that made it really hard for me to really just enjoy it on some level. I felt like it would have made a better short film. I mentioned the movie Greener Grass, the short film that I programmed, and I thought that did the thing a little bit better. Maybe I'm a little biased, but that's I kept coming back to that as I was watching the film, you know, and I don't know, maybe a second viewing would help. I felt like it was trying to be almost a Wes Anderson, Charlie Kaufman thing, but it just felt flat for me.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I loved it. I just thought it was great. Eric, X-Men Apocalypse, quickly. You really hated it. I didn't think it was as bad. You think it's as bad as Last Stand.
I think it's worse than Last Stand.
Yeah, you think it's worse than Last Stand. I don't think it's that bad.
Yeah, I wasn't bored during The Last Stand. I was absolutely bored.
Well, it takes him 9 hours to pick his horsemen.
I'm saying, he's 75 minutes into the movie, and he's still picking horsemen.
I know. I was like, what the hell is going on?
Get it together, Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. I thought, you know, I mean, there was a lot of enormously talented people in this movie, obviously. I mean, this, the cast in these X-Men movies are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
With McAvoy and Fassbender and Jennifer Lawrence and Oscar Isaac. And the one person that I, the only person that was memorable for me in the entire movie was Olivia Munn. That's it.
Well, she's got a nice outfit.
She does. I mean, I liked her in it. And she's got, I mean, you know, she barely.
Oh, well, she doesn't do anything in it. She's got a nice outfit.
I liked her. That was the best thing in the movie, was her. But it was bad. And, boy, again, this thing's not doing well. We're going to have an interesting conversation about the box office later.
Yeah, certainly.
Wow. And Colin, I know you're not even going to bother.
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Now, I really want to get your opinion on The Nice Guys, because I thought it was hilarious. I thought The Nice Guys was really, really funny, maybe a little too long. It gets a little convoluted, but the chemistry between Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling is great. The girl, I don't even know the girl, I can't remember her name. The girl who plays Gosling's daughter is awesome in it. And there are some really, really, really great and funny moments in it. I enjoyed the hell out of it. It's not, you know, it's by no means a spectacularly made film. It's not very original. I love the soundtrack. I love it took place in 77. And again, the chemistry between the two guys. And Gosling is hilarious in this movie. Absolutely hilarious. So I really liked it. Colin, what did you think?
Yeah, I did too. I had a great time. I thought Gosling was really one of the funniest performances I've seen in the past few years.
I agree.
His freak out moments are just delightful. I had a great time.
You know, I want to mention real quickly, you guys, one of my favorite, maybe the hardest I've laughed at a scene, maybe in any movie this year, was after he's drunk and he tumbles down the hill and he discovers the dead body. And he basically channels Lou Costello. He's basically doing Lou Costello. Oh yeah. Like go back and watch Abbott.
Yeah.
Oh, go back and watch Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. And like when the mummy shows up or the wolfman shows up behind Lou Costello and he can't speak. He like literally he's just making noises and he's trying to call his friend's name. That's exactly what Gosling is doing. With the dead body, he was like channeling Lou Costello, and I was like, and he made so many crazy choices, you know, like really, this is not the way that a leading man would act in a movie like this, but it was just great. Colin, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, I would say, like, for me, the only like thing about it that I was thinking about while I was watching it was like, Russell Crowe's good in it. He's good.
Yeah,
but I kept thinking about how much better it would be if there was somebody there who actually was known for his comedy and could really do something a little bit more interesting with that role.
Sure.
But other than that, I mean, it's a fun ride, and I wish it was doing better.
I mean, I'm with you 100%. One of the most entertaining movies I've seen this summer. And Eric, what about you? What'd you think?
Oh yeah, no, I definitely liked it. And but it's one of those where you can't keep your eyes off of Gosling and everything he's doing. I mean, I think Gosling's at a point in his career similar to where Leslie Nielsen was when he like did Airplane and Naked Gun. It's like we're not going to remember a time when he was doing drama anymore. I think that he's that good, and I think that he should just continue to do comedy.
Oh yeah, and you know, I mean, it's so true. It's so absolutely true. He is a great comedic actor. He's also a fantastic dramatic actor.
Yeah, no, you know? he's great all around. Yeah. And yeah, you know, I'm a Shane Black fan, going back to the 80s stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, but generally his movies, his plots are pretty much all the same.
Exactly.
In a way. It's basically, you know, those movies succeed on the strength of their character relationships more than their plotting, because the plottings have gotten increasingly ridiculous over the years.
Yeah.
But what you do remember is you remember Riggs and Murtaugh. You remember, you know, even Gina Davis and Samuel Jackson. You know, you remember the relationship of the mismatched characters more than you do. You try to remember the plot of Long Kiss Goodnight or Last Boy Scout or, you know, some of these other movies. And, you know, even this one is pretty ridiculous. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is incredibly ridiculous.
Absolutely.
But you remember how good Downey and Kilmer were in that movie.
And he also, by the way, he also made, I'm a fan of Iron Man 3, but he also made a ridiculous Iron Man movie. Because
he did. I think that's his weakest film, though.
But again, I remember when I was watching Iron Man 3, and I really like Iron Man 3. I think it's pretty great. But I remember watching it and thinking, oh my God, are the comic book fans going to be pissed off at what he does with Ben Kingsley's character.
Yes.
Oh,
and they were.
And they were. And I just thought it was hilarious. You know,
that's one of the best things I think he did with that movie.
It's hilarious. So, all right. Well, the nice guys. Nobody's going to see it, damn it. So, but you should. All right, you guys, hang on. We got new movies to talk about, okay?
Okay.
All right, we had to play catch-up here. Eric and Colin have been off for a couple of weeks. They were busy hosting and programming and doing all kinds of stuff with the Chicago Critics Film Festival. You can go to that website and see the Q&As and see pictures and all kinds of cool stuff. Very successful film festival. And they're back, and we're going to review all the new movies. And then Eric and I will talk about the box office as well. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 a.m. All right, the guys are back. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, you can read them at efilmcritic.com, rogerebert.com, and elsewhere. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Eric, tell us about Me Before You.
Okay, well, this is a film based on a very popular book. I'm always weary when someone tells me it's a very popular book. I never know what's popular anymore. But it's a film in sort of the Nicholas Sparks realm, where a young woman played by Emilia Clarke been fired from her, or let go from her job because the business is closing. And she ends up getting a job as a caretaker for a young man played by Sam Claflin, who was in a motorcycle accident. He wasn't on the motorcycle. A motorcycle actually hit him while he was walking, and it's left him paralyzed. And he's his quality of life has certainly gone down. And his mother hires her because she's got sort of a pep in her step and whatnot, and is hoping that she might be able to sort of spring him back to life. Now, she doesn't have the gory details of the caretaking process. She mostly has to just sort of learn from the others, and there's a second caretaker helping him out as well. But she does eventually, you know, sort of get through his icy demeanor and his cool exteriors, and the two of them all of a sudden begin to form a friendship, and soon after, or not so soon after, but a relationship begins developing. Although she finds out that this might not be very long-lived, because he is actually planning to end whatever quality of life he has left through a euthanasia group that he has contracted. So it's up to her to whether or not this relationship will actually convince him to stick around for a little while longer, or whether or not he's going to go through with it. So I prefaced it by mentioning that this is sort of in the Nicholas Sparks realm, although it's not a Nicholas Sparks story. And that's one of the several positives I can actually bestow upon this film, because this film has two things going for it that most Nicholas Sparks movies don't. One, the chemistry between the two leads, Clark and Claflin, is actually there. There is actually something between the two of them. Once you get past the standard, you know, getting to know you stuff that we've seen countless times before, something actually begins to sparkle between that, and actually does kind of radiate off the screen. What radiates even more, though, is the performance by Emilia Clarke, who, you know, most people know obviously from Game of Thrones, and based on what I saw from her in last year's Terminator Genesis, I didn't think there was going to be much of a future for her on the big screen once Game of Thrones ended. And boy, does she prove me wrong in this movie, because just everything that she ends up doing throughout this film, I was completely fixated on. She's playing a sort of a mousier version. Obviously, complete 180 from the kind of character she plays on Game of Thrones and even Terminator last year. And I think she makes so many right choices. I think she's completely winning in the part, and it really sort of gets you through a lot of the more difficult passages and a lot of the flaws that I think are still inherent in the film. I think when the movie just sort of does deal with the more serious subject matter of the euthanasia, I think it doesn't quite fulfill what it's going for there. Although there's some nice things at the ending, but I think that even that is flawed as well. But I'm right on the fence of just kind of basically recommending this film just to see her performance, and I think the chemistry of the two leads gets you through this movie as well. So it's not, I'm right kind of on the fence, and if you were to press me to it, I would say go see the movie.
Okay, well, I'll press you because I liked it. and I thought I was crazy until I started hearing your positivity about it. Mm-hmm. Because I went in with the lowest expectations. You know what I mean?
Me too.
I mean, I went in thinking, like you said, I thought it was going to be another one of these terrible Nicholas Spark type movies. And I don't think that's what this is at all. I think this is a good movie. And it does have, you know, some cliched moments in it. But you are so right about Emilia Clarke. And Sam Claflin, where is this guy from?
Well, he's in the Hunger Games movies.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Oh, see, that's what I remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's very good in this, too. I didn't expect to care, and I did. And a lot of it has to do, almost all of it has to do with the chemistry between the two of them. They really do make a great couple. I didn't think it was going to go down the road that it went down.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't think it was going to go there, but it does go there. And I think it goes there in an interesting way. I think the supporting performances are nice. It's always nice to see Janet McTeer in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't get to see her very much in movies. And I just didn't this was a big surprise for me. You know, I went in, I was like, okay, well, I'll go ahead and see this thing.
Right.
And this Emilia Clarke, and I gave up on Game of Thrones a long time ago, so I'm not really familiar. I mean, I know who she is in the show,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen her on the show, but I can't form an opinion on that at all. I didn't bother seeing the Terminator Genesis movie. So this is my gauge of how this woman acts. And
mm-hmm.
it's a pretty high gauge at this point because she's
great.
She's terrific. So I'm recommending it, man. And I'm glad I'm not nuts because I was thinking when I was watching it and I was enjoying it, I'm like, the hell is wrong with me? Is there something wrong with me?
No, I mean, I don't know if I went that far watching it, but I think I did ask a couple people and just like, I don't hate that movie. Am
well,
I wrong for not hating this movie?
That's exactly.
Like, no.
Isn't that weird that you like, I genuinely enjoyed the film. It's not great. It's not one of the best movies of the year, but
right.
I liked it and I'm recommending it. And for me to sit there going, what's wrong with me? You know,
it seems like the kind of movie that we're auto-tuned to hate.
Yes. Absolutely.
You know, in a way.
Absolutely.
And if the name Nicholas Sparks was attached to it, we would probably be, you know, the auto-tune would be in high gear.
Yeah.
But it's very clear from what Emilia Clarke is doing, and she could have just, you know, been doing the prototypical mousy, you know, character who becomes the swan
right.
kind of thing.
Right.
And there's a little bit of that too.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, the cliches are there, but she every time she brings you back, and I think they're really nice moments that are beautifully filmed.
Yep.
In the film,
yep.
And I wish that there was a little bit more about the more serious subject matter towards the end.
Yeah.
It just sort of seems like, oh, I made up my mind and that's...
No, you're right. I got you. And I totally understand what you consider to be the flaws of the movie. And I agree with you. It's just that I'm still recommending it. You know, and it's much better than I thought it was going to be. So if you're in the mood for that kind of film, man, you know, you could do a lot worse. In fact, it's good. So that's
mm-hmm.
me before you. All right. Hang on, guys. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. We got to get the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Welcome to your work week. Monday morning, that means Monday morning movie reviews. It also means my dad will call in and tell a joke in the jokey time. That's all coming up right here on WGN. We're also going to talk about things that you love but everybody else hates. And we'd love you to contribute. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me to review the movies. And Eric, Colin and I did not venture out into the sewers with pizza. Colin,
yeah.
I'm speaking for you. I'm assuming you didn't
yep.
see the Ninja
nope.
Turtle.
Nope.
Okay, I did not. Eric, why don't you handle Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows?
You know, I'll preface this by just the way you set this up. I'll just say that, you know, there's pizza, you know, is obviously a big part of this series, and their mentor is a rat,
right.
And there's not one pizza rat joke in the entire movie. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
It wasn't in there. But anyway, so this is a sequel to the... shockingly big hit from a few years ago as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise was revived once again by, of all people, Michael Bay,
right.
Who is a producer on both of these movies. And, you know, in this movie you have the four heroes once again doing battle with their mortal enemy, Shredder, who escapes from prison in a sort of a Dark Knight-like prison break on the highway, And Megan Fox plays intrepid reporter April O'Neil, who discovers that Shredder is developing the secret formula known as the ooze. No secret there. with a scientist, a Neil deGrasse Tyson-like scientist played by Tyler Perry.
Right.
Yeah. who I will admit his first scene made me laugh.
Okay.
But, so it turns out that this ooze, if unleashed upon the public, will turn them into essentially it's basically the plot of The Lobster. It will turn them into the animal that they most represent based on their personality.
Okay. I understand Seamus is in this.
Who is Seamus? That's a wrestler?
Yeah. He's an Irish red-haired. He's a ginger wrestler.
Yeah, okay, so that's who that was.
Yeah.
Okay, he looked familiar.
Yeah, he's Seamus.
Yeah, so he play him and this. There's another guy that plays two characters, who I assume are very popular from the cartoon or the comic or whatever, the TV show, whatever. That eventually they're escaped convicts that are turned into a rhinoceros and a warthog by the ooze. And the turtles also discovered that the ooze can have actually the exact opposite effect on them. If they were to use it, it could actually turn them into humans, which then brings up a dilemma of whether or not they should actually, you know, be themselves or not. Okay, so the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film from 2014, the reboot, was all kinds of awful. It was just it had all the trademarks of Michael Bay just all stamped all over it. It was annoying. It was really uneventful. It wasn't funny. The action scenes were horribly filmed, and all that.
Yeah, and I saw that one, and I can attest to that.
Yeah, it was garbage of the first order.
Absolutely.
This one is slightly less stinky garbage of the second order, I guess. A different director, the director of Earth to Echo, I've been told.
Yeah.
He's turned down a bit of the Bay-ishness of the movie. Some of the action scenes are a little better filmed, particularly the highway escape chase sequence, which is not terrible. But the rest of the movie is just kind of begins to leak from memory, just as it goes past you. The one interesting idea of the turtles possibly pulling a Shrek 2 and, you know, using the formula to turn themselves into human, is just kind of brushed upon, and it kind of lingers a little bit, but is never really tested fully. So that is gone by the wayside. I don't even know who the guy is that plays Casey Jones, who makes an appearance finally in this movie. I never missed Elias Koteas so much in my life.
Yeah.
who played Casey Jones in the original 1990 New Line version?
Well, he's the guy from Arrow.
Well, that means nothing to me.
Okay, well, he's Arrow. So
that only makes me not want to watch Arrow because he's terrible. In this film, absolutely, he's the worst, maybe the worst thing about this film. He's absolutely awful, and I gotta say, even the movie, I think, even wastes Megan Fox, who dare I say it, has actually become a pretty decent comedic actress on New Girl and This Is 40, and even her brief stint in The Dictator. And she doesn't get much to do here, except to do a quick change into a miniskirt very early on in the movie. It's one of the only Bayisms that's really kind of left in the film. So a one-star movie basically becomes sort of a one-and-a-half-star movie. And that's about the best thing I can say about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows.
Wow, that's a ringing endorsement.
I know, right? Welcome to the summer of 2016, people.
Yeah.
This is what you get.
Man, oh. Man. Well, you know what? People are responding.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The movie-going public is making it known that they're not enjoying the stuff that's being offered.
So true.
We'll get to that in a little bit. All right. Colin.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping?
All right. Well, this is the latest comedy from Andy Samberg that follows the mockumentary formula, obviously Spinal Tap in this case. And it's about a hip-hop group from the past called Style Boys. And it's actually the guys from The Lonely Island from SNL. Andy Samberg, Akiva Schaefer, and Jorma Taccone, the guys who do all the digital shorts. The Chronicles of Narnia Lazy Sunday video and the Bin Laden one from a couple weeks ago, which actually makes an appearance in this film.
Yes, it does.
And Samberg is sort of the Justin Timberlake of the group in that he is the crowd's favorite and he forges ahead with a solo career that sort of ends up taking more of the life of a Justin Bieber type career. And he has one of the other Style Boys as his backup DJ while the third member quits show business altogether and to live in a farm in Colorado. And now Samberg is about to release a brand new solo album and tour, and the whole thing just tanks. Every stupid stunt, every gesture only takes him down, you know, lower and lower in the public eye. And he has to try to make up for every bad piece of PR he has accumulated. And so, yeah, so it's like it's the Spinal Tap formula through and through, right, you know, through, down to the storyline and, you know, the friendships that have to be mended and everything that goes wrong on stage. It's definitely modernized. You know, the movie takes a lot of sort of unveiled shots at, you know, Daft Punk and Justin Bieber, like I said, and Kanye West and even U2. In terms of how he releases the album,
yeah.
It's definitely a shot there. That's fair. I'm okay with that.
Right.
It, you know, this is a movie that is just strictly trying for laughs. Nothing more, nothing less. And on that level, I think it delivers. It does have some stretches that, you know, don't quite work. Some of the gags, some of the jokes are set up, you know, take a little too long and, you know, go on a little too long and don't quite pay off the way they should. But more often than not, I think the movie nails every target. There's a gag set up in this film involving, like I said, Daft Punk. You know, the DJ character has to wear this stupid helmet, and you know it's going to malfunction at some point. When it actually did, I couldn't stop laughing for like 15 minutes. I think it might be the hardest I've laughed all year.
You know what it was? You know what it reminds me of? This is a true story, and I've talked about this on the air before. In the 70s, Blue Oyster Cult had one of the most notorious laser light shows of all time.
Mm.
And it was one of those deals where, like, man, you got to go see Blue Oyster Cult, man. The laser show is going to blow your mind. At one point, Eric Bloom, who was the lead singer, had a ring and a laser shot out of it. And there was this like rumor that, like, yeah, man, he took his laser ring and he pointed at some guy and his eyes blew out of his head. And it was like this old wives' tale of, like, a guy got his head, you know, his eyes, he was blind and his eyes exploded. And that's the first thing I thought of. I thought of the Blue Oyster Cult. I thought of the Blue Oyster Cult, like, laser rumor during that scene. And I, too, was in hysterics. Like, Colin, hang on because we have to break.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll get more of Colin's thoughts on Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stopping. And I'll give you my thoughts on it, and Eric saw it as well. All right. Hi. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on Monday morning. Monday morning movie reviews are happening. My dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're going to be talking about things that you love, but everybody else doesn't. Right now, Eric and Colin are here. We're wrapping up the movie reviews. Colin was just telling us about Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stopping. And you were in the middle of talking about some of the stuff that you liked about it. You thought it delivered in the laugh department. Correct, Colin?
Yeah, it does. But I do think that the obvious point of reference is Spinal Tap. And the thing that Spinal Tap gets so right that a lot of mockumentaries of this type don't get right is that the band Spinal Tap sounds like the kind of band that existed back then. And the songs in them aren't parody songs. They sound like actual songs that were, you know, like Stonehenge sounds like the kind of ponderous, pretentious, prog rock thing, you
yep.
know, that a band would have attempted back then.
Yep.
Whereas the Lonely Island stuff is obviously parody songs. And so, like, it doesn't quite nail the sort of absurdity of contemporary pop music the way Spinal Tap did in its day. But I think what the movie does do well is, you know, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, all the TMZ stuff is fantastic.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, too often the movie sort of breaks the form of mockumentary and just feels a little too conventional just as a regular movie. It stops feeling like a mockumentary or a documentary after a while. But on the whole, I think this movie is just funny.
in spite of all that, it's a really funny movie that if you just want to laugh, you know, this and The Nice Guys, these are the two movies to go see right now.
Okay. All right. And Eric.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the way you have to judge this movie, really, is, you know, just how much you laugh and how hard you laugh. And if we're judging just on that, I'm right on the cusp of recommending it as well. What Colin just said about the songs is an absolutely great point. Because the Lonely Island songs in the movie are funny, but they do sound like, you know, like no one would actually release a song like that and expect it to be something, a thing. And I think this movie is one of those movies that has those fits and spurts, that I think that it hits upon a really funny idea and it has a huge laugh, and then it kind of settles back into its mockumentary form, and some of the jokes, you know, kind of fall flat, and then it hits you with another really huge laugh. So it's the movie in crescendos. There's a really just small throwaway bit involving what Bill Hader does in his downtime from the tour. Due to something that happened in the theater, I actually got to see twice, and I laughed just as hard both times.
You know what the key moment there is for me?
The shot of him?
Well, yeah, that, but no, but when he's talking about flat, when he talks about the movie,
yeah,
he actually credits Jan de Bont.
Yes, he does. Shot by Jan de Bont.
I almost fell out of my chair.
Yes. And those kind of just ridiculous, stupid details that, you know, that sell a joke like that, it's like... It reminded me back in Superbad when he's doing the Yoda voice.
Right.
He goes as Yoda from Attack of the Clones. It's that kind of just stupid detail. But, yeah, but and I think that the movie does fall flat sometimes. And Hot Rod has been on cable a lot recently.
Yeah.
And I think, Nick, you and I are Hot Rod supporters.
Oh, absolutely.
I am, right. Too.
Okay, oh, yeah, so is Colin. So is Colin, yeah.
Okay, so all of us are Hot Rod supporters.
Oh,
I've watched the movie like three times. This has been on cable. When I was watching, I was sort of judging the laughs in that movie based on the laughs in Popstar. And I think Hot Rod, for me, has a more consistent level of absurdity, but I laughed harder during the bits in Popstar.
Right.
So it's one of those kind of movies. It does work. Overall, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was very funny. And, you know, again, like you guys, it's flawed. It's hard to sustain this kind of thing for 90 minutes, although this thing is like 89 minutes long as it is. But, you know, I mean, like these guys are used to making 3 and 4 minute short little bits, little films. Mm-hmm. To stretch that out for an hour and a half, you're going to miss some stuff. And they do. They hit and they miss in this thing. But when they hit hard. And there are times in this movie where I was extreme laughing. There are things in it that kill me, and there's certain people who I just, you know, there's a million people in this movie who make cameos. There's a ton of people. Tim Meadows, by the way, I want to mention Tim Meadows. He plays the manager. He's great in this movie. It's very sort of like a subtle Tim Meadows performance, but he has a moment at the end because he becomes the manager of the opening act as well. Like they bring this rapper in, this very controversial rapper, to headline on the tour because the tour's ticket sales aren't going very well. So they bring him in, and then Tim Meadows ends up being him. He has a confrontation with him at the end of the movie that I just absolutely loved. Maya Rudolph, you mentioned the U2 thing, Colin. Maya Rudolph scene is hysterically funny.
That's a good scene.
Joan Cusack shows up as his mom doing blow and shots, and I thought that was fantastic. And again, the scene with wolves and Seal, I was on the floor. My dad literally was almost choking to death. And I want to say this. This is a very interesting experience seeing this movie with two people in their 70s.
Yeah.
Because the references were like, what?
Hey, I didn't even know who half of these cameos were. Okay? I'm very white.
I'm with you. But sitting next to my parents watching the scene in the back of the limo was pretty interesting. If you know what I'm talking about, it involves him signing a body part. And and I don't know if my parents had seen that kind of frontal nudity for that length of time in a movie ever.
I know the story behind that nudity, do you not?
I do not.
That body part belongs to a certain producer on the film.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out who now, because it's probably not Lorne Michaels.
No.
Oh, it's Apatow.
Yep.
So that's Apatow's appearance in the movie?
Yep.
That's brilliant. Okay.
Wow.
All right. That's great. I thought it was funny. We will talk about the box office and lack of
Yeah.
Wow, did this thing tank. We'll talk about that afterwards. But you got three recommendations from us. And, you know, and I don't even know what to say about the TMZ stuff. That just killed me. The Eric Andre, Chelsea Peretti, Mike Birbiglia, and Will Arnett.
Yeah. I mean, well, here's the thing. I know you don't like Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
Okay. But she, a couple weeks ago, they did a whole TMZ parody. And I swear to God, if you juxtaposed both of them, you wouldn't know which was from which.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, the TMZ stuff, I felt I was, like, 2 weeks behind.
Okay, I gotcha.
Seen it on what Amy Schumer did, and it was almost the exact same thing.
Okay.
All right.
But I still thought that the maniacal laughter from Eric Andre almost sent me through the floor. I was laughing so hard. All right, well, what do we got next week? Oh, I'm actually looking forward to Now You See It, too.
Nick.
So there's that, and then what the hell's the other one? Oh, The Conjuring.
Conjuring 2.
Okay.
And Warcraft.
Boy, another fresh batch of movies for the...
That's right.
By the way, I just looked up, because I'm seeing Conjuring 2 tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And I just looked up the running time.
Yep.
2 hours and 13 minutes.
Are you kidding me?
No. James Wan went epic.
Oh, man. All right. Okay, well, listen, Colin, thanks, buddy.
All right.
We'll talk to you next week. Eric, you hang on.
Yeah.
We got some box office, or lack thereof, to talk about, and that's coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday. That means Monday morning movie reviews and box office with Eric Childress. You can read Eric Childress's box office report at movies.com. You can also read him at RogerEbert.com and elsewhere, and efilmcritic.com. And you can hear them, Colin and Eric, review movies with me every Monday morning. My dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. It's Monday. And we're going to talk about things that you love that everybody else hates. That's all coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us and join over 12,000 fans on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let's welcome Eric back. Talk some box office. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
All right, boy. This has not been a good summer so far.
It's not been a good summer.
Yeah.
At all, and it doesn't look like it's going to get a whole lot better. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless people are really saving their money for some movies that we don't really think are going to be hits.
What do you think? Are people projecting huge numbers for Independence Day? Is that a movie that people really want to see?
I don't know. I know that was one of, when I was sort of doing my box office preview at the beginning of the summer, it was one of those movies that I couldn't quite figure out. If people want, like you said, do they want to see this movie? It's 20 years later.
Yeah.
What story are they going to be telling now? They attack the Earth again. Whoopee.
And Will Smith isn't in it, which is a big thing, I think.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was right at the height of Will Smith, really becoming a movie star.
Yeah.
So that fed into that whole thing, too. It was the right movie at the right time, for sure. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I thought just by default it was going to make, like, barely, but it was just going to make, like, $200 million just because of where it's being released.
Yeah.
But I don't know now. Like, right now, any projections that you may have had at the beginning of the summer, reduce them by $50
million. It's true. I mean, I every time I look at the numbers every week, I mean, look at this. The number one movie in the country is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It made $35.2 million, and that's half of what the first one made, right?
But yeah, that's $30 million less than what the original opening weekend was. Now it opened in the first weekend of August, and this one now in June, and it opened to $30 million less.
And it was number one, which I think says a lot, because X-Men Apocalypse made $22 million, and it's only up to $116 million in 2 weeks. What is that going to top out at?
Well, it's probably going to top out somewhere between $150-160 million in the U.S.
And nobody expected that, right?
The overseas numbers are actually pretty huge.
Oh, okay.
So it's that. I mean, it's made $286 million overseas alone. So it's over $400 million worldwide.
Oh, all right.
Already. So it is going. But here's the thing: is that I think X-Men Apocalypse now, and you've heard our reviews earlier, obviously.
Yeah.
That I think this franchise is in the same sort of place that Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Batman vs. Superman are in, and that they're both all of these movies ended up being profitable, but in the long run, it caused some serious questions to be asked about the direction of the franchise.
Right.
So I think that's where, this movie is probably going to be a hit for Fox, but but they have some questions to answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Me Before You, $18.2 million. That seemed to be a pretty big number in my estimation.
Yeah, no, it was the projections of it were around $13-14 million, so it exceeded those expectations, and it's only a $20 million budgeted film. It's already pulled in almost $8 million overseas as well. So this is going to be a nice little hit for Warner Brothers. And if the numbers sort of suggest what it could possibly do, this could do like $55 million, or it could do like as much as like $86 million based on past movies of this sort of genre and the response to it.
Wow. And it's a good movie, too. I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, we talked about it a little bit. Alice Through the Looking Glass, $10.6 million. In 2 weeks, it's made $50.7 million. That's unbelievable.
And even if the overseas numbers, it's about $176 million total worldwide right now. You look in the next couple of days for, like, you'll start to see those stories about Disney officially writing this one off.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that's fine. Like, they can actually afford to do that, considering that Captain America is over $1.1 billion. Zootopia just crossed $1 billion this week. And Jungle Book's at $895 million.
Yeah, and they got a little Star Wars movie coming out in a couple of months. So,
and Dory.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Finding Dory's coming out in, like, 2 weeks or
two
something.
2 weeks. Yeah. So, Monday or two, maybe this month, by Wednesday, you'll see, Disney writes off Alice in the Looking Glass.
Yeah. Now, I wasn't even aware. I guess I had forgotten that the first movie made so much money. It just didn't.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it and thinking it was okay. I didn't hate it as much as everybody else did.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't remember it being the monster hit that it was. I looked at the numbers and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, billion-dollar movie, and a lot of people now are sort of giving it credit as sort of like the first big 3D movie in the wake of Avatar.
Mm.
That's I don't necessarily buy into that. I mean, maybe the 3D numbers were inflated on it. That could possibly be.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the complete result. It was the right movie at the right time. It was Alice in Wonderland live action movie with Johnny Depp, who was still in his popularity, and Tim Burton. There was a lot of factors into that thing, and it was the right movie at the right time. $1 billion.
And this thing, nothing.
Angry
Birds movie also underperforming, $9.7 million this week.
Yeah, but also good overseas numbers. And for an animated film that only cost $73 million, it's made $283 million worldwide.
Wow.
So that's a really solid hit for Sony. One of the few hits. You can actually count on two hands the number of movies that are like legitimately in profit this year.
Wow. Okay. Captain America Civil War, number six. Obviously, this is a big hit.
That's one of them.
Yeah. Okay. Number seven, Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, $4.7 million, bringing its total up to $48.5 million.
Yeah, that's a third of what the first film did.
Mm.
And even for a small-budget film, this film still needs about another $50 million just to break even.
Then number eight, the movie that the only positive, full positive review that, we gave Me Before You a good review too, or at least I did. Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. Wow. $4.6 million. I texted you and told you that there was nobody in the theater when I saw it.
I was the only person in the theater Thursday night.
By the way, so was Jim.
Yeah. Here's a quick funny story about that.
Okay.
Is that I go to my local Elk Grove Theater here where we do things like you do. Screenings and whatnot. I think we're doing Labyrinth on Wednesday.
Labyrinth on Wednesday. Peter's going to host that.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're doing that this week. And so I'm good with the people over there, and they let me in to catch up on movies and whatnot. So that's why I saw Turtles, and then I saw Pop Star. Now, I just saw the manager walking in, so I didn't, officially sign in for Pop Star, saying that I was there. So I was the only one in the theater watching this movie. And about a half hour into the movie, the screen goes dark. The sound is still going, but the screen goes dark. I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
So I run out. I'm like, oh, the screen went dark in there. So something's wrong. And they're just like, were you the only one in there? And I'm like, yeah. And I signed in, whatever. It's like, oh, because no one bought any tickets for the movie. And when no one buys a ticket for the movie, the computer automatically shuts down the projection so no one sneaks into it.
Is that right?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah. They restarted it for you, obviously.
Yeah, they went. They was like, did you see it here? I'm like, yeah, go back to the Bill Hader part.
Let me see the Bill Hader part again.
Right.
Wow, that's interesting. I never knew that. That's pretty cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. So number 9, Jungle Book, $4.2 million. And, man, number 10, The Nice Guys.
Man. Pop Star, Nice Guys, those numbers aren't, you know, those are kind of expected. You know, I mean, The Nice Guys, you know, was never going to, it was never a movie that was going to catch steam. It was just not, you know, it didn't open very well. It opened fine, but it was just, it needs word of mouth, and it's just, there's too many movies out there for it to really sort of develop any momentum.
My thought was, like, after I saw it, my thought was that they released it at the wrong time. To me, that was a movie that you should release in, like, September or October.
Oh, completely, completely. I mean, and then frankly, I mean, you know, we love Ryan Gosling, but, you know, other than, like, Notebook, he's not really a draw.
No.
You know, by himself. I mean, The Big Short made some money and whatnot, and he's great in that.
Yeah.
And Russell Crowe's not exactly a box office star anymore either.
No, he's not. You know, and I loved on the when they were on the trailers and stuff for it, where they were saying it was from the director of Iron Man 3.
Right.
Like, that's the movie that they're it's like the most un-Iron Man 3 movie that you can imagine.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't say Kiss Kiss Bang Bang because everyone would go like, what?
Yeah, what's that? Even though that's the movie that you can compare it to easily.
Totally.
Yeah. Boy, it's a good movie, man. It was funny because Steve Cochran, you know, was hesitant about going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
He had heard bad things. I guess Dean didn't like it very much, and he was talking about it. And I mentioned how I was looking forward to it. And then I gave it a great review, and I insisted that Cochran see it.
Yeah.
And he did, and he loved it, and he thought it was hilarious. And I think that's the case with a lot of people. I mean, you need to tell people that this is a very funny movie.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Well, of the wide releases that have, I mean, like the big, the wide, you know, 2,000 screen wide releases this summer, the three best reviewed films so far have been Captain America, The Nice Guys, and Pop Star.
Wow.
Those are the three best reviewed movies of the summer so far.
Wow. Okay. There's something for you. All right. Okay, cool. So next week, we're looking for The Conjuring and Now You See Me.
Yeah. Well, you're looking forward to that.
And The Warcraft. Is The Warcraft going to be the number one?
No, Conjuring's going to be number one.
Okay.
Yeah, Warcraft is looking at that's your next Alice movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. I understand that Duncan Jones is already hedging his bets.
How so?
Well, I mean, he's already said, you know, he's got some issues with the film.
Smart.
Yeah, he's already
he's getting ahead of it.
I know. And listen, I was kind of, you know, when I saw his name attached to it, I suddenly went, "Oh, well, maybe."
Yeah, I did have the exact same reaction because I saw the trailer and I'm just like, who the hell wanted this? And then, like, I don't know, it was like a couple months ago where I was just like, oh, Duncan Jones directed
it? I know exactly. Oh, the guy who directed Moon and Source Code? Man.
Yeah, now I'm going to feel bad when it tanks.
Okay. All right, Eric, thanks, buddy.
Okay.
And we'll talk again next week.
Yep.
And I'll see you on Tuesday at Raiders.
Yes, you will.
Okay, man, take care. Eric Childress, everybody. Eric Collin, review the movies, and we give you the box office. Right now, we got a break. We'll do it again next week.